Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 80 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today in order to finish off this week is Brian Lockhart of Hamilton Shot by Shot. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Rob, and I'm here to frickin'sy talk.
Frickin'sy talk or spreckin'sy talk?
Who knows? I can't pronounce anything right on my own show. If you ever listen, my daughter is constantly correcting me on how I pronounce words and names. So you tell me.
Well, I make $1 million for breakfast. So
we're back. We were back here doing coke right before we got
exactly
before we got on the podcast.
Yeah. Don't go into the green room.
What are you doing?
All right. No, I was saying that to you. So minute 80 begins with John finishing his response to Al and ends with Ellis starting to make an offer that he hopes Hans will not be able to refuse. So yesterday we ended the minute mid-word, where Al asked John, how's he feeling? And John said, pretty fun. And it got cut off. So today we get the rest of that. He goes, unappreciated, Al. And he goes, hey, look, I love you. So do a lot of the other guys. So you hang in there, man. You hear me? You hang in there. Yeah, thanks, partner. Now, I love this back and forth between the two of them. You know, it develops these characters so well. You know, we can easily see how they're slowly becoming friends, even though they've never met each other. You know. Kind of like podcasting, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, we're hundreds of miles or thousands of miles away from each other, and you know, you can still become friendly with people
by going through a traumatic experience together, like podcasting. There you
go. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't have called it a traumatic experience. Editing, but we don't edit together.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
It's a lot of fun.
I like to edit. I just don't have the time to do it. That's right. My problem. So yeah, no, but I like the way that the movie is taking the time to develop these characters this way, that they can have this type of conversation. You know, and I think that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, and basically they're little moments, but they're somewhat profound. You know, because Al doesn't know him, but he's still trying to cheer him up. And saying, hang in there, you know, we all love you. And so do a lot of the other guys. You know, it's always nice to hear. People like to get compliments from other people, even if they're people they don't really know. Mm-hmm. So that helps, you know, with the way that works. And then the scene completely changes, right? And we're back to the hostages, which we haven't really been with the hostages in quite a few weeks. It's been a while. I think one of the last times where we really got something from the hostages was when, you know, Holly went and made her requests from Hans. And that was only Holly. That wasn't even any of the rest of the hostages around. You know, and at this point, we get a shot of both Holly and Ellis sitting on what appears to be rocks or benches or something like that. Doesn't look very comfortable for them either. You know, and we see Ellis, you know, doing what he does best. Snorting a little bit of coke. You know, we see him snort on one side, and then we see him snort on the other side. You know, he's really giving us a full show of what it is that he does.
Yeah, he's not even trying to hide it.
Yeah, he's not hiding it from anybody. You know, I'm assuming then everyone in the office already knows that he's a cokehead. So yeah, they're not that concerned from that perspective, I guess.
Agree, because Takagi didn't seem to be surprised when he caught him earlier in the movie when he's like, Mr. McClane is a police officer, you know, and he's cleaning up, you know, Ellis is cleaning up. So, yeah, I'm sure they're well aware of his antics.
But apparently he's very good at doing what he does.
Yeah, sales. Yeah, he's exactly. It's kind of like the Hollywood actors who can get away with a lot because they're good actors and they make a lot of money and they don't care if they have a drug problem. It's only when they start getting too crazy or no longer box office worthy that that's when all of a sudden they start to care.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, that's true. So, and he at this point stands up, and I mean, we get a shot of Holly who looks at him, and she looks a little bit concerned. You know, she isn't really sure what he's up to, but it still it plays out well that you know, she looks like the house mother, I guess you can say. You know, she knows that she's the one in charge now, even though Ellis might be higher ranked in the company. But, you know, he's not taking any responsibility for things, and she's doing it all herself.
So you can't trust him. Yeah, he's not.
So he, like, stands up and clears his throat, and she looks at him and goes, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "I'm tired of sitting here waiting to see who gets us killed first, them or your husband." Now, how does everyone know that it's John who's causing these problems?
Well, I think he just is assuming that he's
no. This is not an assumption. This is not an assumption.
Well, he knows.
He's stating a fact.
Well, you're right. I think he just knows because he's not there with them. He knows he's a police officer, and somebody's disrupting things. Like, who else would it be? It's not like they have security. It's not like any of these, traitors or whatever you want to call, whatever business they, the Nakatomi does. It's not one of them. So, it's easy to know it's him, that is McClane.
Right. Okay. I mean, I can understand that. I mean, the question is, there's a point later on where Ginny says to Holly, "That man looks really pissed." And then she goes, "He's still alive. Only John can make someone that angry." You know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And, at this point, it makes it I guess it makes it less plausible that there isn't going to be somebody who's going to give over this information. Next week we'll talk more about the whole thing between Ellis and Hans, their conversation and stuff like that. But, if you have, let's say, 30 hostages here and they all know that it's John who's causing the problems, you'd think that Ellis is the only one who it's crossed his mind that, if I throw John under the bus, we can maybe get out of here.
I think only about four people even know, though. It's like Ellis, it's Holly, it's the pregnant lady, and this was Tagagi. Yeah.
And Takagi's not talking anymore.
Right, exactly. So
he lost his head a while ago.
Yeah, maybe the guy that kissed him, might know that who McClane is, but other than that, like, nobody, he didn't really meet anybody, so they wouldn't know.
Right. Okay, there is something to that. And at this point, Holly says to him, "So what are you going to do?" He goes, "Hey, babe, I negotiate million-dollar deals for breakfast. I think I can handle this Euro trash." And he goes, "Hey, sprekenzy talk." Now, first of all, Hartbachner, I haven't seen him in very many movies, but he's amazing in this role. He's hilarious. He's not meant to be hilarious, but the way that he plays this character is just so funny. Because it's completely over the top. But he's playing the 80s drugged out yuppie.
Oh yeah.
And he's doing a great job of it. Completely. And during his speech, you see that all of the extras are like completely frozen. Nobody's paying any attention. They've all been given instructions. Don't look. Don't move. Don't turn your head or anything. So they're all, just looking forward, looking straight forward, not moving. And there's just this one white-haired lady who's who seems to be rolling her eyes in the middle of everything that Ellis is saying, which I find hilarious. You know, it's as if she's like she's sitting next to Holly on this huge rock, right? You can see her really well in second 36. All right, and when Ellis stands up and goes "Sprechen Sie Deutsch," so she like turns her head and it looks like she's like rolling her eyes. So in my warped mind, you know, I think that she must be like Ellis's secretary or, you know, one of the other secretaries, and she just can't believe that Ellis is acting this way. And she's just completely just rolling her eyes. Oh my God, he's at it again. Just shoot this guy for you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I did catch that, actually. I did.
And it's just pretty funny, you know, the way that it's, you know, it's like an extra that made a mistake or something like that. Who knows? I mean, first of all, Ellis, you got to say he is drugged up, but he's got a lot of balls for everything that he's doing here.
Right.
You know, I mean, first of all, by saying to one of the guys, "Sprechen Sie Deutsch," that's not the best way to try to convince a terrorist to take me to your leader. You know,
he's very condescending.
Exactly. Yeah. You'd think that if he is so adept at making million-dollar deals for breakfast, that he would be able to know how to be a conversation starter and not be condescending.
He's a salesman, though, and he's one of those douchey salesmen. So he's like, he's going in with that air of confidence and like, you know, I know what I'm doing. And hey, buddy, we're going to make a deal, you know, like the kind of people that, so, you know, the kind of salesman people hate, you know, and so he's going in with that arrogance to say, hey, I can deliver what you want. See, I'm so confident I can be kind of a jerk and we'll want to make a deal. So, yeah. But I mean, again, especially with an underling, you know, you would think that he would, you know, be a little bit more, you know, I don't know, not so over the top like that.
Yeah. It's definitely true. Now, have you ever heard the term Eurotrash before?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know anything about it or not?
No, just that it's derogatory.
Yeah. Right. So Eurotrash is a term for Europeans, particularly those perceived to be socialites, stylish, and affluent. Eurotrash is often used as a collective term for such European expatriates in the U.S. or other areas with a concentration of wealthy Europeans. Some consider Eurotrash as a derogatory term, whereas others see it as a humorous, ironic description of themselves or others. They have been discussed in various forums to clarify its intent, with a majority view that the original meaning was not intended to imply impoverished or trashy Europeans or be the European equivalent of white trash. Among the early printed uses of the term was in 1980, when a wealthy Greek living in New York named Taki Theodorakopoulos, something like that, wrote a newspaper column titled Eurotrash in the East Side Express. And therefore, people got used to the term at that point. And the term was also used in the 90s. There was an American band named Cracker. Have you ever heard of them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I remember them.
So they released a single called Eurotrash Girl about the main character in the song has a dissolute life and drifting across Europe in pursuit of an angel in black who he, you know, titled the Eurotrash Girl. So basically, well, apparently Ellis's ploy, even though you and I think it's not the proper way to do it, it still got him in the front door. You know, and then the next thing we know, we get a shot of Hans and Carl talking, and Hans says, "If you'd listen to me, he would be neutralized already." And then Carl says, "I don't want neutral, I want dead." Now, I find it really funny, you know, the fact that he's changing the word neutralized to neutral,
yeah,
which is completely it basically means that he didn't understand.
Right, because neutralize does mean take him out, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a funny bit.
Yeah, which you think that's in the script? What do you think?
I think that is in
the script. Or do you think that's just a flub on Gudenow's part?
I'll take it as – I'm going to stick with my original and say it was in the script.
Yeah, sure, you don't want to change – no, I'm just kidding. And then we see Ellis enter the room, and he actually knocks on the door, which I find hilarious. You know, he's acting as if he's in the middle of a real meeting.
Right.
You know, he just knocks on the door, and it once again shows that he has absolutely no clue. He's without clue or clueless, however you want to say that, about who he's dealing with here. He thinks he's dealing with someone who is there to negotiate, which we'll talk about more next week, but apparently not. You know, and I love as he's talking, you know, Ellis says, "Hope I'm not interrupting." And then Hans goes, "What does he want?" And he goes, "It's not what I want. It's what I can give you." And at this point, it's an amazing eye movement between Carl and Hans, because Carl, like, motions that he wants to take out his gun and shoot him. And, you know, Hans just, like, waves him off, you know, like you see in baseball movies and stuff like that, you know, where the catcher says, you know, "Throw this type of pitch," and the pitcher, you know, shakes his head and waves him off in a subtle, you know, in a subtle way.
Right. It's the best part of this minute, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
It's very subtle, too. You can miss it. It's
very
subtle.
It's
easy to miss. Yeah. It's good, though.
Yeah. And then he goes, "It's not what I want. It's what I can give you. Look, let's be straight, okay?" And people are going to have to come back on Monday to hear the rest of that conversation, because that is where this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No, I have nothing.
All right. So the script has a few things. First of all, in the script, this is the minute where it actually has the whole Gail Wallens talk about Hans being possibly Hans Gruber. And it does, you know, they did a great way of showing it to us beforehand, where it's next to the cameraman from Thornburg and stuff like that. But what they do here is, you know, we see that the it closes. There's a close up of a TV, and then it turns on, and then we have, you know, it like moves a little bit, like, you know, the screen rolls a little bit, and then we see Gail Wallens, and she says, "Of the Nakatomi Building. Sources say that the terrorist leader Hans may be this man, Hans Gruber." A slide of Hans appears behind her. At the same time, the camera pulls back. We realize we're on the hostage floor, and Hans has just turned on the set out here for his guests. He smiles modestly as they recognize him from the on-air shot and returns to his office, which is, like, really funny. They're basically saying that he brings out the TV for the hostages to have something to do. And that he's happy that they can see that it's him on the TV screen. And then it continues with Gail, and it says, "A member of the radical West German Volksfrei movement. Strangely, the Volksfrei leadership issued a communique an hour ago stating that Gruber has been expelled from the organization and is operating on his own." And then we have Harvey, her co-anchor, who says, "Obviously, Gail, whatever his affiliation, it's safe to say that Gruber's terrorist actions in Los Angeles tonight are, well, terroristic." Which they once again show how stupid it is. And then it says, as the continues, Ellis suddenly stands, heads towards the terrorist office. Immediately, the chief guard, Fritz, moves to intercept Ellis. Holly says, "Where are you going? I'm tired of sitting here waiting to see who gets us killed first. Them or your husband?" And to the approaching Fritz, "Hi there." Holly, "What are you going to do?" "Hey, I negotiate million-dollar deals for breakfast. I can handle these clowns." To Fritz, "I want to talk to Hans." "Hans, sprechen Sie talk?" He doesn't wait for an answer. Fritz follows him. Holly worries. So in the script, even though we know that Ellis is completely coked out, they still give him a lot of dominance, the way that he's taking control of everything here. You know, he's not waiting for the terrorists to take him. He wants them to follow him.
Yeah. You know? I like the way it played out better on.
No,
on,
I do too. No, yeah. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. But I'm saying I like the way that they add that here. It could be something that they filmed and they cut because they didn't want to. And then we have the conversation between Carl and Hans, which you are correct. He just says, "I don't want neutral. I want dead." It's in the script.
So I'm batting 500 right now. I'm one. Yeah,
completely.
One
there you
one
go.
For one.
One for two. Yeah, one for two is great. Batting 500 is much better than most people. They both turn at the rap of the door. Ellis is there. Hope I'm not interrupting. Hans to Fritz. What does he want? Fritz shrugs. It's not what I want. It's what I can give you. Look, let's be straight, okay? Now, it cuts out the whole thing with the nod and with the gun and all that stuff, which works so much better visually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Than the way that they do it here.
It's a good moment. I mean, it's easy to miss, you know, when you're watching it, you know, but it's definitely worth paying attention to because it's a fun little thing. Like,
yeah.
They don't even want to hear him. I mean, Hans is like, all right, I'll just listen to him, see what he's got to say.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see. We can always kill him later.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. All right. You have anything else you want to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
No. I mean, just Die Hard is one of my favorite, you know, movies. It's one I can revisit often. And so, yeah, I appreciate you having me on to talk about it and some good solid. This is a good solid week. So thanks, Rob. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. I always have fun talking to you, even if we're just talking over credits.
But, right. You know, yeah.
Why not? This is, you know, if we have what to say, then it's always as long as the conversation flows, that works. And I like that. So every Friday I have a segment called Weekend Surprise, where I pose a question to my guest, which sometimes they know beforehand what the question is going to be and sometimes they don't. And I mean, one of the most controversial things about Die Hard over all the years is whether Die Hard is considered a Christmas movie or not. So, Brian, what are your thoughts on that? And, you know, detail your work.
I knew that was going to be the surprise pop quiz. I just had to feel.
quiz, hot shot.
What are you going to do? Well, you know what's funny? Right before we started recording, I actually had this conversation with my wife. We were, I told her, I said, I bet you that's what that's what Friday's question is going to be, right? And my opinion is it is. Her opinion is it is not. She sees why some of the Christmas themes are there, but she ultimately it is not. Is in her opinion it is not. But you didn't ask her; you asked me.
Well, and, you can call her over and we'll hear what she has to say.
She can show her work, and we can have a little debate. You know. Yeah, well, basically, I say it is because of all the themes that are in, like the argument I used with her, you know, was, you know, it's an estranged family in a different town, and they get, you know, they come together at Christmas time. It's Christmas that brought them together, and they learn the true value of love and forgiveness and all that. And at the very end, you know, everybody, you know, spoilers, they're going to go home as a married couple and they're going to go see their family. And it starts snowing, like the magical time I had, when I mentioned, you know, with my family and, you know, the weather outside is frightful is playing. And, you know, it's Christmas. They're going to go home and have Christmas together. And, Christmas is throughout, you know, you get multiple Christmas songs. You get Joyful, Joyful.
Ode to Joy.
And that gets sung at church, you know, at Christmas time. So that's, you know, that counts as a Christmas tune.
It gets sung at Christmas time because of Die Hard, or?
No, I think it's just, it's one of those. maybe they're like, let's get the kids in for them. We like the movies. There's Christmas trees. They're at a Christmas party. Like, everything is Christmas. Ho, ho, ho. Now I have a machine gun. You know, here's at the, you know, again, spoiler, you know, like they use the pack, you know, the wrapping, the gift wrap and the tape and all that in order to, you know, facilitate the final confrontation. So it's all there. So I do think Christmas is a huge part of Die Hard. So it is a Christmas movie. And again, it's a nice feel good ending about a family reuniting. I would say on the flip side, to actually prove my argument a little bit more, and this was something I mentioned to my wife, Die Hard 2 also takes place at Christmas time. But unlike Die Hard 1, Die Hard 2 is more of this is just the backdrop to explain why the airport's so busy.
Right. And why they're in Washington.
Yeah. Other than that, and that maybe why it's snowing and the weather's terrible. Other than that, there is no real.
I'll be damned if I'm going to clean this up.
Yeah. Heck, even his wife's name is Holly. You know, like, so, I mean, there are Christmas themes throughout that first one. So, yeah, I do definitely think Die Hard is a legitimate Christmas movie, especially a Christmas movie for guys that like movies.
Fair enough. And what was your wife's argument as to why it's not?
I mean, she gets some of the themes that it takes place at Christmas, but she's usually – and she even talked about, you know, agree with me about some of the things about as far as, you know, being separated, you know, and finding – it's got a happy ending. But typically it's usually like somebody's like an overworked person and they have to find joy at Christmas time, or they stop believing since they were a kid, and then at the end it's like a magical – like they have a realization, or even if it's like two estranged couples who – or long-lost loves or something where they find love at Christmas because of opening up their heart and all that good stuff. Like that's kind of more – you know, like what she sees as like a Hallmark movie or something like that. And again, like even like Scrooged or, you know, where it's like, you got to learn the meaning of Christmas. That's all valid. And that's kind of the way she sees it. Like nobody's learning the meaning of Christmas at the end of Die Hard, but she does recognize that, yes, they have a nice family ending where they drive off together when it snows. But when I said, like, yeah, they're playing Christmas music, it's snowing, she kind of just looked at me like, it's a little bit of a stretch in her mind. So,
okay.
You know, but it doesn't mean we don't watch it around Christmas sometimes. Cause I think my son agrees with me. So, you know, maybe it's a guy girl thing. I don't know. But in my opinion, it is a Christmas movie. And if you feel it's a Christmas movie, then have at it. That is your Christmas tradition. Enjoy it. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
All right, cool. Very good. So would you like to, for one final time, tell people how they can get in touch with Brian Lockhart.
Well, I mean, the main thing, you know, main place to find me is through my podcasts. And I do Hamilton Shot by Shot with my daughter, where we review Hamilton one song at a time. That is at Hamilton Shot by Shot on Facebook and Instagram. I do Marvel Events Timeline podcast with Travis Bowe, where we go through Marvel's history, big events. That's at Marvel Events Pod. That's on Facebook and Instagram as well. And it's not currently active, but it's in the bag. I got a Marine Corps Movie Minute podcast. It's just out there in the world. If you want to find it, all these shows are available on podcatchers of your choice.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, and you can find me directly on my website, movierobminute.com. So Brian, thank you very much. This was such a fun week. I'm so glad that we were able to find some time to talk about Die Hard, one of both of our favorite movies.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, you know, when I do Die Hard 2, even though it's less of a Christmas movie for you, maybe you'll be interested in coming back. We'll see how that works out.
I would love to. I got a lot to say about that movie. So you do it, and I'll be there. And thanks for having me this week, though. I had a great time.
All right. I'm very glad. Thank you very much. So, everyone, I'll be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.